I'm going to introduce to you Bill Bennett. And Bill is best known, do you know he has a nickname? Do anybody know what that nickname is? Well, he fired up a JBL 4312 tweeter at the age of 20 at a station, and his former engineer has now and still calls him Tweeter. So feel free to call Bill Tweeter, and he will answer you. So everybody, Bill Bennett.
Oh, wow. After that, blowing out a Tweeter story. Linda, thank you so much. That's actually at 20. We were WJR, WHYT in Detroit. We were installing a big PR&E setup, two studios. I mean, all studios. Beautiful kit. You know, everything arrived, pre-cut and everything. And I'm behind installing amps before we put the counter into the production control room. And I was wiring it from the back. And again, 20, kind of dumb. I didn't know about this thing called a service loop. I just made the nice clean wiring to the backs of the amps and put all the furniture back. And a couple years later, Hal Buttermore, the engineer, said, hey, yeah, you know, you didn't leave a loop in there. So he couldn't pull anything out. He had to move the furniture out. So anyway, things we learned. So hi, everybody. I hope that I can get through this all in 45 minutes. My ADHD kind of kicks in and the stuff kind of goes everywhere. And there we go. So I'm actually going to put my glasses on so I guess I can read that. So last year I presented about automated captioning speech to text for radio. Not television, but radio, which is kind of a unique thing. But this time I'm going to talk a little bit more about what you can do with that when you start doing that, which actually is, I think, a whole lot more interesting. And we're going to talk a little bit about what captioning is for file-based versus live. In searchable audio transcripts that you get from that, integrating transcripts with audio edits and editing, and how it makes it a lot easier to do that. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about ChatGPT. Everybody's heard of that. Of course, we have a product called EncoGPT, so I'll show you a little bit of how that works. These are kind of glimpses into the future with that, and also with synthetic voice modeling, a piece of that, and how it all only starts if you caption first and foremost. So, little statistics first about people and hearing. Approximately 15% of American adults age 18 plus have trouble hearing. I know I do. Tinnitus in one ear and, I don't know, not great hearing out of the other one. Although subwoofers in the car, 2 15-inch subwoofers when I was a teenager, is a bit of a problem with causing that, but it was fun at the time. And of course, as we age, our hearing definitely doesn't usually improve. Gallaudet University in Washington, D.C., about two or four out of every 1,000 people are functionally deaf, which is a real challenge. And so that's something that can be fixed, I don't want to say mitigated or fixed, but enabled. You'll see what I'll get to the example. Because right here, radio, right, as I'm talking, you can see me and you can hear me. But if you're driving around hearing this podcast that I'm sure we could come out with any day now, right, you wouldn't be able to understand any of it. You wouldn't be able to hear it. And all of a sudden that content is lost. If you're deaf or profoundly hard of hearing, how often do you enjoy radio at all? You can't. And so captioning it is a way to enable that for a broader audience, but it does a whole lot more than that. Now, TV has been having to do this for decades, and the FCC regulates it for TV, and we all know about captions, and we see that, and I don't know about you, but a lot of people, including me, put captions on for a lot of television content, just depending on what it is, just easier to hear it, maybe if there's accents or a lot of noise or something. So I say captioning makes radio more accessible. One radio station that's been doing this for several years now is WAMU in Washington, D.C., and that is because of their relationship with nearby Gallaudet University, who I mentioned. They found that when they have special events in the studios, they need to have a captioner or a signer there so that the people who are there from Gallaudet or related can understand what's going on and interact. And so they decided, why not just caption our website 24/7? Caption our radio station 24/7 to the website. And I th- think there's, is this a laser pointer? What happens if I hit this button? Oh, that was the launch button. Okay, stop. So if you go to that URL, we could do it here, but let's skip the demos because of time. You will get their just a page with an iframe on it showing their captions 24/7 as someone talks, the words spit out. And there's a whole lot of neat things you can do with that besides what you see there that we'll kind of get to. This is a pretty simple workflow of just simply showing how audio starts with audio. Our product is completely on-prem. We have cloud versions for those workflows that need it. A lot of customers prefer to avoid that. I mean, our previous speakers were just talking about that, and they're right, Alex and Shane, because if you're on-prem, you reduce a lot of things that can go wrong. Go to the cloud if you need it. If you don't, maybe skip it. It's expensive. When you're captioning, you're also generating transcripts, and that's going to be kind of key for the rest of this presentation, is that text, not captions onto a video screen like TV, but transcripts. And also, the lower right corner is traditionally was called CART, Continuous Access Real-Time Translation. It's kind of a dated term, and it's not really about translation, but that is what we're doing here live. So, and this is what's something simpler is offline. And this is actually strangely interesting for radio, too, because imagine you've got hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of hours, or depending on how long you've been around or how much content you've made. If you're looking, and I'll talk about this later, but it seems like a good point here. If you're looking for this one point where this one person said this one word in this hour-long interview, how are you going to find that? You're going to have someone sit down and listen for it. Worse than TV. In radio, you can only even have a visual cue. But if you have a captioned file, a transcript, a sidecar, that is, and these things are all chronologically indexed, you can find that really fast. So that's useful for just post-produced or pre-recorded content, so not even talking live. I say for radio, why do you want a caption? Well, I mean, I'll say in a minute also, again, it's kind of like the right thing to do. I think it is. It's nice to broaden the audience. Ultimately, there may be reasons why that you may want to feel more compelled. At the moment, FCC doesn't regulate it. There's really no simple mechanism. I mean, I might actually argue with that. We kind of have one. But otherwise, it's not required. The National Association for the Deaf, though, and this is their perspective on captioning for television, but I honestly don't think that they're going to stop there. I mean, one day, I mean, they're already talking about the FCC regulating captions for streaming content, for video content that's streaming. And in fact, some local legislative bodies from places as big as Seattle or San Francisco to as small as Ann Arbor, Michigan, have legislation that require any video monitor within a public space, something about maybe 13 inches or larger in diagonal, if the content that's showing on it has captions, by law, they have to have captions turned on. And that's great for like public spaces, restaurants, bars, waiting rooms, things like that. The captions have to be on. Besides, I think, nice to grow an audience, you also therefore grow a market share, which is something interesting to both non- and for-profit radio, when you can grow on a bigger audience with captions. And like I said, you have live transcripts, like WAMU already does. And get a hold of local or national influences, should they come to pass. Quick couple points. NPR, right, a stalwart in content creation, big national organization, generally would think to do as many things as progressive as they could, were sued because a lot of their content, their video content, was not captioned, and they lost that. And same with folks like university settings. Again, these are for videos. Harvard, MIT, also sued. Amazon and Netflix, years ago, were also sued. Now you notice they're all captioned. Jumping forward, forward in the slides now, I'm going to go backwards in time. Over 100 years ago, the technology was pretty raw before we became automated like we can do with speech-to-text now and AI-based engines. But it was typically a woman who was a stenographer in a courtroom at a machine typing away what they're hearing to create a legal record of what was said, of course, way before you could actually do an electronic recording of that. That's a hard job, and they can't take a break, at least not when they're out without scheduling it. These keyboards are fascinating. They actually support multi-touch way before our little small handheld devices. These things over 100 years ago could support multi-touch. Now they have Wi-Fi and SD cards and stuff. And the output is phonetic. It's not a QWERTY keyboard. So you and I, I don't know if anyone here can read stenography text, but if you did or didn't, whichever, lower right corner is what it looks like. That's really hard. So it's a skill set, and there's just not many people, and they're very expensive, roughly $100, $150 an hour. And they got to take breaks. It's challenging. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, except to say that folks like PBS, again, public broadcasting in general, kind of has the opportunity to experiment and push the envelopes a little more. They did something way back with Gallaudet University, and the old way of captioning was you watch video, and then you pause it, and you get your Chiron keyboard out, and you type in what they just said, and then you go back, and you burn that in, and then after that sentence is done, you do it again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and that's post-production, and that's adding open captions, which are permanently burned down to the video. Normally, when you turn it on and off with your remote, that's called closed captions. They may look the same on the screen, but at least with closed captions, you can turn them off. Again, not going to talk a lot about video here, so we'll skip past that. This is a workflow that captioning is normally done for, whether it's television really, especially, live broadcast, but live events as well, not courtrooms. They're usually in the courtroom still. This is complicated. The signal goes out. The captioner, not usually in the same market, gets the signal. They actually, for a long time, used ISDN, which I still think for it stands for it still does nothing, right? And of course, you can't, telephone couplers even before the day, because this is a really low bit rate, baud rate type of thing, now mostly over the web. And then it gets sent back to the uplink and coupled up with the broadcast. And it's a lot of pieces that can go wrong. I mean, you're sitting there on your keyboard and cat jumps up, dog jumps up, spill water on it, what have you. And you got to show up. And typists are typists. They're humans. They can create typos. The nice thing about automatic stuff is it's a lot cheaper in scale. There's huge data sets as far as language. Not just is it doing natural speech language processing, it's also doing statistical, our product is statistical analysis on the word structure. It understands nouns and verbs and to point pronouns and stuff like that. Like the word two, or there, or there. How do you know how to spell that? How does it know? It looks at the rest of the sentence structure and implements the proper spelling based on the words, not just before, but just after. So you watch, and you do see a little bit of a delay, 2 or 3 seconds as I'm talking here, typically. And it pauses on words that are more ambiguous, other words spit out real fast, because it's like, well, that's definitely the right word, and so on. Humans summarize a lot because they can't keep up. People who are deaf absolutely don't like that. They want to know exactly what was said. Of course, typos and experience and dwindling people out there are also factors. There's a lot of varieties, on-prem, cloud, and hybrid solutions. We can get into that, but I kind of want to get into some demo videos that I've got here. But like anything else, if you run it on a computer, you can run it on-prem, or you can run it in the cloud. Kind of depends on where you need to do it. There we go. This is a bit of a simplification, but not by much, of a radio capturing workflow. Audio comes into a box. And you can save all kinds of caption files and sidecar files, depending on format. Sidecar files, by the way, are simple text files that are in different formats. They're ASCII, but they're still in different headers and formats based on what video editing program you're using, Adobe Premiere, Final Cut Pro, DaVinci Resolve, whichever. That's kind of a video term. We also generate a simple transcript file that is just plain text with or without the time points, which is more useful for like an audio-only workflow. And then when you make a video with captions that they didn't exist already, you create this caption file, then you drag it as a timeline element into the video editor. It's really easy. When you've got this data, and this is something I love to say about this stuff, very early slide, I said text is just data, right? As soon as you digitize it, it's just data. Where do you want to send it? Anywhere. Anywhere at the same time. So, you know, whether it's LED ribbons in a sports venue or a search engine optimization destination like Google Ads via some sort of generative GPT, we'll get to that. Smart devices, phones, mobiles, web stuff, take your pick all at once. Cloud-based is actually second. This is cool, too, because you can spin this up instantly. As the previous speakers were talking, as Kirk was talking, you can definitely take a virtual environment and spin it up much quicker. I mean, a few clicks. Configuration and some IP stuff and ports. That's not to make it too simple sounding, but you don't have to go and buy another computer or grab one off the shelf. And by the way, let's see, I'm going to back up for a sec. David Lehrer is going to be talking about metadata coming up. One of the neat things about when you start captioning, both really, the words that are spoken on air, you're creating data too. And so by captioning, you are creating metadata, which can be massaged and mined and distributed really, really in interesting ways. So we'll get to that. Yeah, mentioned 3 to 4 seconds. Accuracy, mid to high 90s. Never believe anyone who has a specific number that they say. We get 93%, 97%. You can't say that because it depends on the content. Does the person have a heavy, thick accent? Thick accents is one thing, but heavy, thick, not so certain. Two people talking at once, background noise, people mumbling. These are approximations only. So, and the best way to find out is to try it out and try the typical content you may want to caption, worst case stuff, see how it works. We do that with customers a lot. But the other cool things is with technologies like we have, ASRs, you can have customizable word libraries, update all the names of your hosts, your underwriters, your sponsors, unique jargon that might be talked about. That's a human has those too when they're typing. They have those names or those words in front of them or with keystroke hotkeys, but the ASRs, automatic speech recognition, can do that as well. No voice training, that's all gone. For any platform I'm aware of, there's no voice training anymore. What's also neat is automatic punctuation and speech, speaker change detection. If what you're looking at with my captions, if it thought someone else was talking, depending on a threshold setting, it'll inject a couple of chevrons to tell the reader of the text someone else is talking now. And it should also be, again, depending on threshold settings, where it thinks there's a place for a period, or a comma, exclamation mark, something like that to help show kind of where a sentence is going. We talked about live, but boop. Okay, speaking of live. There we go. Transcripts. Just a quick example of what they look like with different type of time code entries. They don't all have to be full, all caps like this. That's done mostly because when you're feeding displays or on-screen captions for video, people like to see all caps. It's just easier to read that way. But definitely a mixed case is just as easy. And of course, it's a text file, so you can instantly edit that in a text editor to change it to mixed case, title case, or what have you. So. Yeah, in radio, it's not just listeners. I keep wanting to say listeners when I talk about this, but no, it's audience. So if you're doing live speech to text, you can bring the captions to your website like WAMU is doing. Absolutely simple. But you can also send it to mobile devices and to tablets at the same time. In-room cart displays for this. How about when you have live entertainment, performers of any sort, or conferences or local events and meetings, town meetings that are held at your station? Well, you can feed these little devils real simple. So, and of course, all this time, transcripts, permanently available, which you can search for, right? Who doesn't search through email anymore, or maybe their Google Docs or OneNote Drive to find files anymore? Same with finding that one word in that hour-long interview, that needle in the haystack, right? What's also neat is visual radio, which is more common in Europe, but I think it's growing in the States, that's video, right? And so granted it's streaming, it's not regulated, but wouldn't it be nice to have captions, or at least available captions, to an audience member that might be watching it? Again, especially a lot of countries have different languages being spoken in them. In America, it's usually English, and then there's Spanish and some French, and various Native American languages. But that means there's people around here that may not natively speak the language that's being said at the time. They may be learning it. So if they can see the captions, they'll better understand what's being said. So again, kind of nice to have. Let's see. Well, if you have a media asset management system, again, with captions tied to audio or video, it allows you to navigate through and find out that instance of that word. Or you could do it manually by just searching through an hour-long transcript, and that hour-long transcript says that 36 minutes in, this word was said. Oh, jump to the audio at that point. Oh, there's that word. Great. Let's edit. And now, we're going to get a little more interesting what we're going to do with this here, some demos. I don't have these live. I'm just running video on the PowerPoint already. But I'd happy to discuss and show more of this later, or tonight would be a great chance to do that for nuts and bolts. But it's usually easier to just make a video because it works, and I have only 24 minutes. So we're not going to do that demo. But, yes, okay, so here's a video. It's about a minute. It's the raw audio. of a dog being rescued. And we're going to start with that audio, and we're going to digitize that. So.
This is Tess, the newest friend of Fox 2, and we met her on the highway. Last Wednesday, photojournalist Todd Bringen and I spotted this spotted pup on the way to an interview. She was running across the Lodge Freeway just north of Chicago in Detroit. The car in front of us tried to swerve but hit her back end.
We're going to have a freeway run for you.
10-4.
Meanwhile, the call started coming into dispatch at Michigan Humane.
So just for a matter of time, I'll skip through the rest of that. It's a hard story at first to watch, but it gets good. So now we're going to move forward and take that audio and run it through the Encaption product in an offline mode. So simply I'm dragging this file into a watch folder, which can be networked across a local area network, wide area network. It's just Windows, which means it always works, right, Windows? And so the system detects it, and it's working on a first-in, first-out basis. So as it's skimming, there's progress indicating there. And it will, when it's done, it'll save the file in the same file naming convention as it was created. It'll just have different suffixes for the different sidecars. And that's what I should say we're doing here, is we're creating these sidecar transcript files. Could be one simple plain text, it could be five or six. Not many places have that many types of video editors, and of course in radio, you don't even need that. So typically for radios, you're probably just saving one text file. Does it at double real time. So an hour long audio recording would take half hour to caption. And it's done, by the way. You just saw it, save it there. And here's one of them. So I'm opening it up. And, Scenarios format, SCC. Hexadecimal, anybody got that? That is the one format that I still can't read that on the fly, but that's all the formats it saves. That's one of them, so check that box if you want. Here we go. This is something more, this is a VTT format, web VTT. So there we go. That's the captions, and why it's broken down is because captions in television is based on 31 characters per line. So that's the break point. Could be anything. Could be much longer, much shorter, but that's kind of the general way that we work with this, is that. Now, think for a moment what we just did. We've taken the text from a video, could have just been an audio recording, and we've created text from that, right? Now, let's say you've got that audio recording, and you want to navigate through, like I was saying, and do some editing to it. Two quick examples of how you can do that these days, today, with modern video. Again, this is video, but imagine if these are just audio files. So Hindenburg has this really cool product coming out now. It's out. So here's a simple audio file that they're going to edit on. Bring it in. And we have this on permission, and we're business partners with Hindenburg, so not just stealing us. That never happens, right? Presentations. And I don't have their software, however, installed, so I can't really show you, but in a minute now, must go faster. So it's grabbing skimming across the audio, creating the live transcripts of it, and this is file-based. So I just said live, sorry, file transcripts. And then what we can do nowadays is tag each of these unique speakers, which is a test that we were actually doing with that station in DC a little bit ago, where once the system knows by via the AI the types of voices, and it catalogs each one as a different entity.
And one more thing, could you, in a full sentence, say...
So you simply have to, talking on top of audio here, thank you. So you simply have to just tag it on, this is George, this is Chris, this is Bobby, and then it just keeps their names all the way through. And then, this is kind of one of the fun parts.
What he has to do is let the fabric in for manufacturers duty free.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast.
And now you've just done a live edit of a recorded transcript
of an audio file.
Let the fabric
in for manufacturers duty free. I spoke to the...
Done. So that's a neat benefit of speech to text in an offline editing environment. And we're going to skip past that. And this is what we have this in our product as well. In this case, audio from a video. So in a moment, the video will play. And it's the same thing. This is, as both my previous speakers were talking about, web interfaces are so prolific. All of this, by the way, is just running in an HTML5 environment on Google Chrome. It's just running in a web browser based on a Linux system in the back end that's using, wait for it, where's Kirk? Microservices. So, it's pretty cool. So, and these are all the different text formats you can save it as and so on. So I'm going to skip past this. I'm going to put my glasses on. I can't actually see if I've got anything more interesting on this. Oh, yeah, nope, that's it. Okay, cool. Okay, so there you go. There's two examples of what you can do when you've got text related to an audio recording or a video that has audio in it. And of course, more and more radio folks are doing things with videos, so there is kind of a hybrid there. Now we're going to go look at what AI can do with all of this, and generative AI that, of course, back in December, nobody ever heard about. Except a few geeks, which does include most of the people in this room, which is good. But it's really, taken off. So here we go. Now, these next three slides, they get more and more interesting. But what we're going to do is show how to generate keywords from a transcript of an audio recording. And then we're going to also generate a summary from a generative AI of a transcript of an audio recording. So we're going to do a couple of things. Keyword search. In summary, and so here we go. I'm just going to skip past these. They're kind of fun to look at if you have a chance to ponder them, but with any diagram, you need a little time to ponder them. So I can show you these later if you want, but the fun part is actually watching it work.
Okay,
Sorry, and I forgot to say, these next couple of videos are narrated by Matt Walther. He's an ENCO employee for 25 years, product manager. He and I are very much bound at the hip on all kinds of R&D and product development stuff that we work on. So really cool guy, really smart. I'll stop talking and let him talk.
Okay, this is a for the show demo. This is on the InCaption 4 and Translate workstation that we're talking about. What we're going to be doing is showing how we can use AI to generate keywords based off of a offline file processed story. So what you see is I just processed some offline files here. There is a shortcut to drop a video in for offline files. There is also a get keywords icon. All the icons for this OpenAI stuff are all the same. Little computer with a chat icon for ChatGPT. So what are we doing here? We are taking a video, any kind of short video. We might take the evening news, and we are going to copy this into that folder. Instantly, InCaption picks that up and is starting to process that file. Once that file is done, I will be able then to click this other icon right there, and it will send the text body of the output from the offline file off to ChatGPT and get a returned list of keywords that were used within this particular file. So this is a keyword generator for SEO, search engine optimization, or whatever else they might want to be able to use for. We're done with that file. I'm going to click this icon. It takes that file, sends the file off. You see it, and as soon as we get a results file back, then we will have it and we'll be able to continue to move on. It takes just a few seconds. And there we go. We have our file. Here are all the files for that particular one. So we're seeing some names, some other states, and some other areas. And essentially, that's it. So this will generate your keywords file. So this file, then you can then do whatever you'd like to be able to do with it. So there you go, nickel and dime, under 2 minutes of how to generate keywords from an offline file.
Okay, cool. And thank you, Matt, virtually speaking. So that's a simple example. What if you had an hour-long interview? What's the biggest words that were in that? Again, let's say you're a librarian at a station going over hundreds or thousands or more of recorded interviews. You got the time to go through all that? No. So you put each one of these, you generate a transcript, then you run a summary on it, and then it'll tell you the words that are most mentioned. That's useful for some type of editing or post-production work or librarian work, but what about if you wanted something more interesting like a summary of that, some actual usable text? So we'll have that coming up. We'll have that coming up next. This is a couple of APIs we've been working on. We've got a whole new one coming up much more robust than this for NAB coming up in New York a couple weeks from now with one of our partners. So these are just screenshots, but let's look at this now to watch it summarize. Yeah, who here are familiar with the ENCO DAD system, digital audio delivery? A few of you? Okay, cool. And thank you if you're customers and appreciate that. So what you're going to see here is another narrated video. Dad will send to the song data to ChatGPT through our own front end, which we call ENCO GPT. And it's going to be the artist, the song, and then which is part of every playlist, and then a summary is going to come back. We can tell our ENCO GPT engine to maybe pre or post load that stock information with some other things, maybe like give me a sentence or 10 words about the band or something like that, and then let it fly and see what comes back. I always recommend it. Humans check this stuff later. We've heard about GPT hallucinations. This is not a lot of room to get messed up in, but you never know, so it never hurts. So I'll stop talking.
So let's take a look at this. We're going to demo this using Playback Deck 1. That is going to be the best deck to kind of take a look at this. And I've got a couple of tracks that are already created. So we're going to bring up the playlist called AI Track 1. So if we want, we can right click and we will come out of Taylor Swift blank space. And I'm going to select Insert. And I'm going to go down here to the very bottom where it says AI Track and select that. And instantly, Dad will pick it up. It's doing a summary. Once it gets the summary back from GPT, it's going to do an assembly to where it's going to add the intro and outros. It'll then send that off to the text-to-speech so it can be voiced. And you're seeing this all happen in real time. And then it'll convert that cut to make it into a voice track, and then it will be ready. So literally, that fast, it is ready to go. So if we want to take a look at this, I can go into Tracker. It is automatically set up to use segue markers and talk times around here. If I play the whole preview,
ENCO Radio is Detroit's best rock. Taylor Swift's song Blank Space is a pop anthem about the consequences of jumping into a relationship too quickly. It is a tongue-in-cheek exploration of the idea that Swift's relationships often end in disaster due to her impulsiveness. The song is a catchy and clever exploration of the idea that Swift's love life is often tumultuous. Hey, keep listening to ENCO Radio for more music trivia.
So there you go. There is an example of that, and you can literally do that for any song. Again, you would.
Yeah, so of course that's just us doing it in development, so it's not really as finessed as a real creative would do in a studio, but it just shows the point. And that voice was a generic voice. You can also model these voices after actual people, which some of you have probably read about is kind of a thing. I gotta say that we're not replacing people here. We're augmenting the customization of content to the listeners. And there's so many channels that need to be more interesting and more customized. And this allows you to do that with the same amount of people, but just do more. Now, this is going to be a little bit of a variation on a theme here, as Dad will send the song data to ENCO, really, GPT, which then returns a text summary and converts it to speech and converts it with a simple to complete the voice track. So let me just, wrong button. Okay. Wait a minute. Oh, that's a double slide. I thought it was like deja vu all over again. Okay. Skip past that. Now we're going to take a 4-minute read, and we're going to try to summarize it. Imagine what I was saying earlier, what if it's a 30-minute interview, something like that. Still be kind of fun. Here we go.
Here is ENCO GPT. So this application allows you to select a test file. So summarize in here is, a story that we could kind of write about. So this one is a story about Grubhub, which is a long story. It's about a 3-4 minute read, about 400 words, talking about a kid who ordered about $1,000 worth of food from Grubhub. So I'm going to select summarize. I'm going to get that summarized off, send out. And if I want, then I can save this as output.txt. Save that. And then if I want, I can run a thing to generate the voice. It'll add an intro and an outro to it. And then if I want, I should be able to play that. Now remember, it'll have an intro and outro built onto it. You can eliminate those. They do not, it's not required, but if you'd like to have them, you can do that. Then it'll add in this story.
Here's a quick news item. Six-year-old Mason Stonehouse accidentally spent $1,000 on Grubhub orders while playing on his father's phone. His father, Keith, was alerted to the spending spree when food started arriving to their home near Detroit. Keith tried to call the restaurants to stop the orders, but they told him to contact Grubhub. Grubhub offered the family $1,000 worth of Grubhub gift cards, and Mason's parents used it as a teaching moment, taking money out of his piggy bank to represent what he had spent. Mason's phone privileges have been taken away for the time being.
And there was no, in this example, there was no outro. I had a blank line there. So that's an example how one can kind of use GPT.
Okay, so, and by the way, sorry about the echo in that. That's in the recording. I should have probably run it through Stereo Tool to get that out of there. But that it's, again, 4-minute read, could have been much longer, summarizes it down. I suppose if you summarized an hour-long interview to a few lines, you'd lose some things that might matter in that. That's a big ratio, but you can get the point. This, one more piece, manual weather. Yeah, okay, and so this is fun. That's not that hilarious, but it's just another thing that you can do with generative API as a tool. So,
and I could do something like today's cast is rainy with periods of strong winds. And I could go on and I could give it an entire forecast again if I save this as output.
So really, that's just a human knowing exactly what they want to
voice,
say.
Generate voice, it's done, then listen to that.
Today forecast is rainy with periods of strong winds. Keep listening for more news at the top of the hour, here on 104 The Mix.
And you have a synthetic voice.
Now that is not itself that stellar, right? Because that's just voice to text, or right, text to voice, text to speech, TTS. But that still could be entered into an automation process where you have this weather information modeled into a voice that maybe of a presenter or a regular host or something. So that's kind of what that is. Lastly, that's the last of the videos. Wow. We're actually not going to run over, but I think the point here is that humans type stuff, say stuff on the air. They don't always have enough time to do all of that, especially when you can start automating these things like metadata and song title, artist title, artist and title information like that. You can merge that data that's known with some additional flowery information from a generative AI that has deep language models that it can pull from. And then you can take that and put it through synthesized voice or modeled voice from one of your hosts and create a kind of a continuum of additional customized content with very little effort. Once you develop it, it's not much work. I mean, I think when you create a voice model, you talk, I don't know, I think maybe an hour or something. There is training for that because you're telling it all about how you talk. And of course, there's interesting legal ramifications and so on that we've all as a society only beginning to explore. But from a technological standpoint, it allows you to, this GPT world, generative AI allows you to do more with what you've already got, and right now it's not even expensive. I mean, it's pretty interesting. Who knows in a couple of years from now what we're going to be talking about? Of course, we won't really be here. We'll be virtually someplace else or here virtually or whatever. All right. So summarize though, we do not have the ability to do any of this stuff. Unless you capture the voice and digitize it to text, speech to text. Then you, especially with these interviews and long form pieces and long back catalogs, and then when you value your text by adding, or when you value your interviews by adding the text component, You can navigate and search through it, repurpose it. Imagine on your website, if you have this wonderful news hour program, an hour or 2 hours a day, wouldn't it be nice to put all your transcripts on the website? Maybe you say, look, these are done by an automated mechanism. It's not done by humans, so you both make mistakes. Interestingly, in the court world, they have what are called scopists that then have to manually go through every word and every that's spoken and in the transcript and manually make sure they're all correct. That's expensive, as you can imagine. But most viewers probably, or listeners, would love to be able to just be able to see a transcript of an interview. I don't know about you, but I like sometimes reading things way more than I want to see a video or go through an audio recording of it. It's quicker. But spoken word, once you digitize it, the text becomes searchable both inside the company, as I talked about for edits, or outside on your website for the public. And other applications, who knows what your creative team will think of. Captioning helps create makes your content more accessible to more people, pure and simple. From a video standpoint, I like to call captions the third rail because you've got audio, you've got video, and the captions are in between. And for radio, it's maybe the second rail if you don't have a video. Real-time translation, this, by the way, I should mention what we're doing is not just are we doing English, we're also doing real-time German translation. Yesterday I was playing with Danish and Spanish and French as well, but I figured German might be the most general, we're in Dane County, right? I guess I could have done Danish, but Danish is a funny language to look at. Oh, wow, I love listening to it on the Muppets, but it's like, wow, that's interesting. But yes, synthetic voice modeling is something that could be useful. And cost could be easily underwritten. I say easily, that takes another salesperson or two. But your ad folks, underwriting folks, when it's captions, it's text. It's easy to automate the insertion of a brand within these threads of text, or for that matter, a modeled voice that says, oh, by the way, brought to you by the Ford dealership, or what have you. Yeah, it's Halloween, so I have to always, Halloween season, so I always have to use that. Any questions, comments? Yes, in the middle there on the right. Oh, hold on, they're bringing a mic up to you there. I think they're bringing a mic up to you. Or I might want to stand up if they can see you.
All right, I got a couple from the text. Do you work for Churches for Hard of Hearing?
Excuse me?
Do you work for Churches for Hard of Hearing?
Enco provides automated captioning solutions for houses of worship, yes.
Absolutely. All right, then Wheatnet or Axia AOIP compatible?
No problem at all. Any kind of Windows middleware, Ravenna, AES67, Dante, Wheatnet, LiveWire, you got it.
All right, then last one, you mentioned using custom word libraries. How many words can a custom dictionary hold?
I think about 1,000, a couple of big shopping channels in this country use this, and they have their own brands, and each one has about 500 or 600 brand names that are unique words, and they're all in there, and they haven't run out of room. But we do have a way to automate swapping those in and out if you really run out of room so that you can... you can have the right library loaded when you need it. What's funny is the lexicon's over 1 million words anyway. Words that I didn't even think existed, this engine will spit out even though it hasn't been taught the word yet. So you may not need what you might think.
And then the last one you mentioned, filters, is this the forbidden words list?
So there is indeed a forbidden words list, exclude words that we call it. And that is something that we can show later once we're not recording. As Bill knows very well, a couple of years ago we tested that. It blocks about 1,500 or 1,400 words. You can add to it all you want and delete. For example, one of the shopping networks they sell ladies' wear, and including bras, and the word breast is in there, because it could be used wrongly. Well, they needed that word to get out because they sell these products. So, you can take the words out if you need to or add more into it. It's singular and plural, quite the list. Longer story, the Department of Defense has a bunch of these units, and I was at the Defense Intelligence Agency a couple of years ago where a whole bunch of generals meet, and setting this up, and they told me, you've got to remove this list because these generals swear up a storm, and they need it on the public record. I mean, classified, but they need it on the record. So I'm like, okay. So that was interesting. Yeah, next.
I was just wondering about music and how that would be displayed. Like, our Wisconsin Public Radio has a lot of classic radio, classical music that they play. So as far as how that would show up on the live captioned website of the radio broadcast, would that just be music notes? Would somebody have to preload into the encoder the like song and composer information, and that would be displayed during the music broadcast? Just how would that translate?
Right, the latter part is definitely possible with some automation to inject composer and title information, or you know, or orchestra name or what have you. Speech isn't music, music isn't speech, so it's not going to do anything when it hears music. What's interesting is if it hears singing, it's designed to put out words when it hears them. So sometimes, like sometimes when Clifford has B-roll music, just background music playing, like when we set up, it sometimes captures the words, the vocals, just bits and pieces. So if it's a song with singing in it, you may want to have it turn off with automation at that point, just to not get out words that aren't really quite intended. So, hope that helps.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. You think more? No. Okay, now I have to get this photo. Kirk always does this, so I'm really stealing his idea. But can we, can everybody, oh wait, I gotta turn around to do this. It'll be funner. I did that again. Can everybody wave? Hello? Okay, and thank you for that middle finger over there. No. Everyone, thanks very much.